Good evening and welcome, dear ones. Your presences are each a great blessing for all of us. It brings me great joy to see your faces on the screen. So we come together to enter into our circle of great intention, to take our place, to engage in a conscious exchange, to listen deeply, and to feed and be fed by the impressions given. May our work be food for lifting the consciousness of our world and ourselves. In the name of God transcendent, God omnipresent, and God immanent, the spirit of life, all life. Amen. Well, tonight we are approaching the day of All Saints' Day, a season of remembrance of all those in the conscious circle of humanity who hold a special place in our lineage and in our teachings, particularly. All Saints' Day is when we think of what we owe to conscious humanity, to all those saints and teachers who have gone before us and opened the door, shown us the way by their own being. They released a great deal of energy, and doubtless they still do. For this, we owe them much. So tonight we honor and celebrate the life and death of G.I. Gurdjieff, truly an extraordinary being, who died on October 29th, 1949. And the following passage, which I am going to read, is about his death. And it was quoted by Louise March, who you might recall, I've quoted her several times. She is the translator of Beelzebub's tales to his grandson, All and Everything, into German. And she worked with Mr. Gurdjieff on this project for 20 years. So these are her words. She says, in the fall, Gurdjieff sent me back to Vienna to continue working on the German edition. I left Paris with a concern about his deteriorating health. One of the former Ouspensky people kept me posted about this condition. When he entered the hospital, I was called back to Paris. As I was flying over Stuttgart on October 29th, 1949, I knew Gurdjieff had died. Upon my arrival in Paris, I called Madame de Salzman, and she confirmed the fact of his death. Together, we went to the American hospital where his body lay. As Madame de Salzman and I stood beside him, I was reminded of the two Marys at the death of Christ. The funeral service took place in the Russian Orthodox Church in the Rue Daru. The congregation stood in absolute silence for an hour, waiting for the coffin to arrive. The priest at the church was struck by the congregation's composure. Later, he asked, what did this man Gurdjieff teach? For my whole life, I have wanted a congregation like this. Just as the funeral ended, the electric power in the church failed. In fact, the lights went out in the entire quarter of Paris. Was Mr. Gurdjieff making a little joke? He had said innumerable times, when my teaching understood, will not be any more electric light. Gurdjieff was buried in the Avon Cemetery between the graves of his wife and his mother, whose tombstones had bent toward each other. So may we too find presence in our inmost being and assuming the possibility of a conscious servant, taking our own place in the conscious circle of humanity for the transformation and healing of the world. We are very grateful for you, Mr. Gurdjieff, for showing us a way. So in the spirit of recollection and wholeness and great gratitude for receiving these influences directly, we might say that we are the grandchildren, perhaps the great-grandchildren of Mr. Gurdjieff, a rare privilege. How many people are there that would be interested in these ideas? And even more so for taking these ideas and playing our part with them. Will I work for the future? Will I clothe myself with these ideas and let them envelop me? All three centers, softly, quietly. We place ourselves here and now with intention and immanent trust, taking perhaps all the heaviness of life and lifting it in hope and love in the midst of our own vulnerability, with back upright, stilled, contained. We scan our bodies, perhaps noticing and then letting go of any points of tension and constriction. We breathe deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day, through our world today. Everything that hurt and confused, that created fear, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than. Everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy and hope, all affirming, all denying. And we hold it as offering, reconciled, as food for being. We lift it and ask that it all be transubstantiated in our being, as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. I hand over all complexities. I hand over all plans. I hand over all anxieties and small fears of my heart. I yield to the divine human life. I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. We now enter into our time of Lectio Divina and our reading will be read three times. God has given us through these gifts precious and very great promises, so that through them you may escape from the fragmentation that is in the world and may become participants of the divine nature, involving a surrender of one's whole self, not just for a period of time set aside each day for some form of prayer or meditation. A commitment of immense proportions and requiring an imminent trust that God will bring us where we hope to go. If we submit to this inner conviction or urging that we have to start, it does not matter how many difficulties there are, we have to go. We surrender to God's transforming process, to the arising of a new quality of being. God has given us through these gifts precious and very great promises, so that through them you may escape from the fragmentation that is in the world and may become participants of the divine nature, involving a surrender of one's whole self, not just for a period of time set aside each day, for some form of prayer or meditation, a commitment of immense proportions and requiring an imminent trust that God will bring us where we hope to go. If we submit to this inner conviction or urging that we have to start, it does not matter how many difficulties there are, we have to go. We surrender to God's transforming process, to the arising of a new quality of being. God has given us through these gifts precious and very great promises, so that through them you may escape from the fragmentation that is in the world and may become participants of the divine nature, involving a surrender of one's whole self, not just for a period of time set aside each day for some form of prayer or meditation, a commitment of immense proportions and requiring an imminent trust that God will bring us where we hope to go. If we submit to this inner conviction or urging that we have to start, it does not matter how many difficulties there are. We have to go. We surrender to God's transformative process, to the arising of a new quality of being. And so it is. You are now invited to share what you received from this passage and its reading, or perhaps from gazing upon the image and allowing the impressions to come to you as an influence. Tracy, good evening.
Good evening, Marianne, and thank you for that lovely image. It was breathtaking. I felt called to share. I feel like I'm living that passage as we speak, and on a precipice of stepping into that commitment, you know, that sense of feeling like, to a degree, my spiritual life has been compartmentalized, and trying to have it all, in a sense, have a little bit of everything. And just more and more, the path forward is becoming clear. I worked through an octave of discernment and got the clarity I was wishing for. And just a strong, strong wish and love has been in my heart. And in the past, where I felt held back by fear, it's love that's pulling me forward. And so I'm excited about what the Spirit has in store. Interestingly enough, I took my first step and I immediately experienced second force of a flat no. which I got to observe some reaction there within me, but it's just part of the process, and you know, it's already happened in God. It's already true. I just need to continue to step forward in faith and courage, and know that it will unfold in God's time.
I feel joy in anticipation from you and around you, Tracy. Thank you for that sharing. Thank you. Steve, good evening.
Good evening. I saw the words and the image complementing each other. The phrase fragmentation and then that merging into unity, into God's presence, the divine energy that brings it all together. And then you look at the image, and it's all the different colors, all the different emotional states or eyes. Mm-hmm. And then as you get pulled into the center, it becomes white light. Mm-hmm. And you almost get the sense, we kind of talked about this in the last few weeks, of there's the part that you do, but sometimes there's the pull that overwhelms you. You can't resist it anymore. And it's a combination of your will and grace that pulls you in, a desire for unity. And so that's all. That's what I have.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you, Steve. And now we have Minnie. Oh, for a moment, there were Minnie on the screen. I thought a plethora of hands had been raised. Ah, Jack and Jackie.
Good evening, Marianne.
Good evening, Jackie.
Thank you. This passage really spoke to me, and I, in a way, will paraphrase, in spite of difficulties, sometimes we just have to go. And I have been given this past week, and Jack, the opportunity to escape from the fragmentation of our little work worlds where our noses are pressed too closely to the surface of the of our little world here, to go to a place, Santa Fe, gifted to me by my beloved member of this community during fall in Santa Fe, golden trees, true fall and their first snowfall of the season, an escape that we have not had from the fragmentation of our little world since before COVID. And to be able to be in nature, to be under the stars. We were in the desert under the stars, which is part of our study for October, which we can't see here in Austin. And to touch into what is real and to realize we can become so attached to even this community, but to our little concerns and worries that we don't see ourselves in true scale. And every now and then we simply have to escape and go. And what a blessing it has been for both of us. And it has renewed my spirit, has renewed my understanding of the amazing beauty of this community and our love for one another and how we care for one another. And we don't even understand what that means. We just say yes and we love one another and give to one another. And so I'm renewed. And blessings to you, Marianne. I think you've been renewed this week as well.
I have. Thank you. Thank you both. Yes. It was wonderful to see you. Someone else would like to share. I think the microphone is still open. Jack could share too if he wanted to.
Would you like me to share?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we met a saint on that trip. You, Marianne.
Yes.
And it happens every time I fly, I run into another saint from a church. And when I say saint, I don't say it lightly. I don't say it lightly. And so we booked a trip to Santa Fe. My knee goes out. And Santa Fe is a walking town. And I found the work, Mr. Gurdjieff's work, just soulless, because it was like poor little me, you know, and it was transformed into, let's just do what we can do, and that's it. And I'm getting a new knee, actually, in December. That's kind of cool. But I really want to honor earlier the sharing from the name's,
yes,
I'm losing it, but anyway, she was Tracy. Thank you, Tracy. You are an inspiration for a guy that has a simple little leap.
Yes, indeed. Amen. Thank you, Jack. Thank you. Well, now it is my joy to welcome Peter, who is going to bring closure to part five of our curriculum for the year, Higher Body, and take us into the next step of our work together. So, theosis. So, welcome. Good evening, Peter.
Thank you, Marianne, and thank you for sharing, everyone who shared. Last week, we were blessed by Brian Graham's very meaningful teaching. If you missed it, I encourage you to listen to it. And tonight, we'll just begin with our homework from last week, and then we'll go into the subject for tonight on theosis. So just as a review for all of us, encourage robust sharing tonight, especially if you have never shared before. It's a wonderful opportunity to help others and help yourself by sharing how you're growing and where you're working. Just as a reminder, the homework, and perhaps you've shared some of this with your work partner or in a journey group this week, but the invitation last week was to work on this level of consciousness, the four levels of consciousness in particular, by way of noticing how we can fall asleep so quickly, observe our sleep and the sleep of other people around you, and to begin the day with the name of self-consciousness. I wonder how that unfolded for you. Also, the second invitation was to practice inner stop, observing your thoughts, speech, feelings, or sensations, and noticing if your state was coming from conscious three-centered being or habitual recurring. And then third was the invitation connecting with the monthly practice of looking up at the sky or looking at an animal or plant, or trying to be empty of words, just feeling their presence non-critically, observing the thing as it is in itself. And how does your relationship to the object change as you do that? So it's a lot of opportunities there to explore the different levels of consciousness that Brian reviewed last week. I wonder how this homework landed for you. This will begin with sharing now. Just feel free to raise your hands and digital hand, and we'll call on you. Don Hale, please.
Good evening, Peter. Hi, everyone. This week, all of those pieces of the homework came as a one opportunity to experience the spiritual journey as the embodiment of that, in the first commentary that we were reading on the four bodies of man, the four levels of consciousness, the boxes with the arrows from the outside, from the outer part man going in, and then the arrow with the spiritual journey, spiritual ideas coming from the inside out. And that was really what I noticed when I did my stop exercise, as well as looking up at the sky. Because it seemed like every single time that I was able to stop and really observe myself where I was, even the stopping, I was able to do that and recognize that that was not something that was coming from the outside. It was not a formatory idea. I could see the difference. I could taste the difference between stopping, looking at the sky, stopping and seeing everyone around me, continuing on, looking in people's eyes, looking in my own eyes just a minute ago. I could see that I was completely asleep because I was completely into the automatic and automated world of outside. And right then in that moment, I could see everything got quiet and still, because now something, the ideas were coming from the inside out. And I really never noticed all these years I've been looking at that diagram. It's just been boxes, four boxes. But now I was those boxes, you know, I was in the second or third or fourth box in those diagrams. This time I could see the boxes as each one of them a different part of the different level of consciousness, the second, the third, the fourth level of consciousness. And it didn't really matter to me really at that point. It was just the matter that I was able to stop where I was over and over again, each time recognizing that I was a bit deeper than I was the time before, all the way back. And I had a moment yesterday when I was with my mother in our family land, and for four generations, just she was there maybe for the last time. In that moment, as she was looking at the land, I could see her working and struggling. I know that there was an arrow that was trying to get her attention inside herself. And so I was there with her, stopping and observing my own spiritual connection, and I was connecting with hers. And in that moment, she looked up at me, I know, and together we had this moment. And that was just one example of what happens when we are all connected. We all realize that I'm just one thing without everyone. When we're all together, we're all one thing together. But when we're one piece of a thing, we're not nearly as what we could be when we're all connected. And that was my big takeaway from this week. Thank you.
Thanks, Don. Nice to see you. And thank you for sharing. I heard you say the word stop about 10 times. So I think that there's something to that practice. And just thank you for demonstrating the fruitfulness of being conscious enough to stop in the moment and connect the dots and to feel that influence coming in. Thank you. And hello, Deborah. Greta, please.
This was an experience I had with an animal, sort of like Don, in the sense that there was a complete unification of being without words. I was at a dance, an ecstatic dance. I had been very energetic. I was sitting on the couch, breathing deeply and conserving my energy again, but in a very meditative state. And I looked up, and about 6 feet away from me was a small child, maybe 2 years old, who was looking intently at me. And I looked back intently at her, but without the interest in expressing any particular thing. It was just observation and observation. And we looked at each other for an indeterminate amount of time. And then she walked closer and we continued to observe. And she walked a little closer and I leaned forward and I put my hands out and she just came up into my arms, sat on my lap while the music was playing and a million people were dancing in a million ways around us, and put her head on my shoulder. And we rested like that, conscious and unified with each other for probably 15 minutes. At which point she got off my lap and that was the end of the story. But it was the sort of thing that there's a writing called Living Like Weasels by Annie Dillard. And she talks about an encounter with a weasel, and there's a timelessness in it when neither wants anything and is caught in the moment. And I guess that's what we're all striving for, to be in the present, to be in that moment, to glory in it, to feel that unification. So that's what I have to contribute. Thank you so much, Peter.
Thank you, Greta, for sharing. I wonder if I can ask a question about your inner experience when you were holding the child, if there was an awareness of your own inner child and the little child being you.
That was so interesting because someone else asked me if I felt like her mother. And I said, well, never having been a mother, I really don't know what that feels like. But there was, and I didn't feel like a child, etc., but there was a feeling of absolute comfort and safety and trust that was trilling through my body, and just a complete joy that's, you know, hard to express any more than that word.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. And how children bless us so much. with their innocence and their joy and their love and welcome. They are clearly portals to higher levels of consciousness. Stephen, please.
Well, what I decided to do this week was to just survey myself when I'm out and about for negative emotion, just catch them. And a pattern started to emerge. It's aligns pretty tightly with my type, being a one. I don't like to be held up. And so I live in a small town. We live in a small town here, and it's all ranch roads and FM. So you're always stuck in traffic behind someone driving real slow. And I don't like to drive slow. And then we're in the, you know, sometime this week I was in the grocery store in line behind this older lady with coupons and a checkbook in her purse. And my negative emotions started spinning. And it's like, what's wrong with a credit card? And I just, but then I did the inner stop. And I said, well, what better things do you have to do to myself? I mean, I'm retired, so I'm out in the same line that's retired in that line probably during the day. And then I took it up a notch further and I saw her and it's like, that's my Aunt Betty. And this is the most important part of her day. And if she wants to enter the amount in her check register, do it. I mean, she's having a thorough, enjoyable experience being out shopping at the HEB. And so it was a nice way to kind of erase all that negativity and just end with love. So.
Thank you, Steve, for sharing and giving us color to understand your experience and the power of inner stop and that idea coming to you in the grocery line. I think I could just picture that, and I've been there myself. So very practical. Thank you. Steve. I'm sorry, Joe.
Hey, brother, can you hear me? Mm-hmm. Since we're talking about kids and inner stop this week.
What are you doing?
I'm talking to my friends.
Can I tell you?
Leo threw my cell phone in the swimming pool, and usually I would yell. And for some reason, I didn't do anything. I just let it be. I knew I would leak force if I went with the aggressive eye. And I was just amazed by what this work is doing. And this morning he just threw a smoothie all over the wall. And I was like, wow, isn't that look at him go. So I'm just fascinated with what's happening. So thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Yeah, and so you have these very tangible baselines to do your work with these little children, and their behaviors give you tons of opportunities to see how you show up and the different eyes that show up in relationship to them and their behavior. So it's extraordinary. So thank you for doing the work for them and with them. It blesses all of us. Hello, little Leo. Who else would like to share? Thank you, Joe. Jim Motes, please.
Yeah, I had two experiences that really stopped me in my tracks. I was taking my car in to have the oil changed, and there was a little backup, and it was going to take a while. So I walked across the boulevard over to HEB to get some sushi. And I figured, well, I'll get some sushi and sit down and eat my sushi while they're working on the car. And as I entered the HEB, the first thing I encountered was a young mother in a cart, and she had two small children. And one of the children was probably, 12 months old, sitting in that little tight seat, you know, in the grocery cart. And then the other one was probably 3 or 4. And as I walked by, the mother was busy trying to do her grocery shopping and keeping the older child settled down. But I all of a sudden was just drawn to the little tiny child in the cart. And as I walked by, I just caught his eyes and I waved like that. He looked at his mother, and then he wheeled his head all the way around and was glued to me. And we just sat there, and I walked slowly. And then he looked back at his mother, and then I waved again, and he looked back at me. And we were just connected. But what was interesting was his older brother, the 3 or 4 year old, said, "Mom, that man's waving at us." and I realized that, he had a whole different set of concerns that were coming up for him versus the little one. And the little one and I were just, man, we were in the moment. And I didn't choose to do that. That just came out of me. And I was blessed by it. And then yesterday, I was out at a property we're developing, and I was getting in my car, and the top of my car is white, and I looked, and there's this little creature on top of my car, probably 3/8 of an inch. And I looked at it, and it's a spider, right? And then I looked more closely, and it drew me into it. And in that spider's mouth was a little tiny ladybug. And I thought, oh my gosh, I just was drawn into this. And I just sat there, and I got closer and closer and closer. And I must have been like 3 inches from that spider now. And all of a sudden, I can notice two eyes and a mouth. And it's like that spider's smiling at me. And I just sat there, and I was just in awe. And it stopped me in my tracks. It just brought me into a different level of being that was so rich for just those few moments that I turned around and I grabbed a leaf off of one of the plants nearby and walked over and put it underneath that spider, and he climbed on it, and I took him over to the yard where he'd be safe. But, I'm just aware now that there's awe and wonder trying to reach me constantly. And I, of course, oftentimes am just mechanical and I'm not able to be present to it. But those two times I was.
Well, thank you so much, Jim. I love the gentleness of spirit that's manifesting in that way. And it's just a reminder to all of us that life is our teacher if we have the eyes to see, whether it's children, or a little spider. The family of things becomes our teacher. So blessings, Jim. Thank you so much for sharing those little insights. They're powerful. I particularly find it interesting the difference between, you said, the 3-year-old or the 5-year-old and the little baby.
Yeah. Right.
And the difference of ego development and the difference between I and thou and the lack of a connection or the stranger danger, the older one has, that the younger one disconnects. It's very interesting.
And the mother, when the older one commented to the mother that this man was waving, she kept her head down, was trying to sort through the grocery choices she had to make. And she said, "Did you wave back at him?" She was just like checking this off. Let's keep moving. It's so funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Little moments throughout life that become our teachers. Thank you so much, Jim.
Yeah.
Anyone else wish to share? I'm particularly interested if anyone has any experience or perception of the different levels of consciousness in their life. If they saw those different levels at all in their life this week. And just open that up with a question. Lynn, please.
Good evening. I don't know that I'm going to directly address the different levels of consciousness, although I think that that might be a part of it. My main intention was I wanted to share my experience with Inner Stop. We have a family wedding coming up this Saturday, and the tensions and excitement as well have been building. And I have, I got to the point where I was noticing that I seem to be caught up in some of the tension and the going on of wedding planning. And so at one point I was able to really kind of feel into the emotions being rising up. And I was able to, in the beginning, just not say anything and not get involved with the scenario that was playing out before me. And, as the days went on and more of the wedding was discussed, I was able, it was easier to apply Inner Stop because I could more easily recognize when I needed to do so. But more importantly, I began to see where some of my own habits had come from the family influences and the things that I had grown up with. And eventually I was even able to get to the point of external considering and could understand, what was going on with different family members as they became tense and anxious and, continued to, get overly excited about the wedding plans. And I realized that some of these habits of responding to my family were very habitual, that I had grown up having learned to respond that way, and just being able to do the Inner Stop, to observe what was going on with myself, and then to get to the point of being able to externally consider and understand, I felt like that was at least a forward movement in consciousness.
Bravo, yeah, that's a beautiful and very effective place to do work, is in those family dynamics. And I think you leapt forward in your work and seeing that connection between seeing the behavior in them that you've seen in yourselves, and it does arise empathy for them, and it's so useful. You'll never be the same, because something is neutralized when you see that thing in yourself that you see in them, and that you see in them, you see it in yourself. It's such a powerful neutralizing factor, and you'll never be the same. So thank you, Lynn, for bearing witness to that. I guess I see Rusty and Sue, if you can be brief in a brief share, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to, just so many inspiring shares and something came up. There was a teaching that Robin Blauer had the day before I went to Houston to have my life changed with the leukemia diagnosis and having to go straight to the hospital. And he says, it was just a matter of fact comment. He was responding to a question that all of a sudden he just threw out this idea of maybe our purpose in life is to effectively digest impressions. And so as I was, and it stuck with me, and as I was going in and hearing this diagnosis and hearing, here's what we need to do, and on and on and on. And at times through that, this idea of these are impressions to be digested effectively. These are not something screwing around with my life or anything else. The opportunity is here. This is what's being brought forward. And here is a digestion to here's an impression to digest. And I noticed one little change, and one of the biggest immediate first reactions was that Sue and I had some really good gigs coming up in October. You know, there's some kind of upgrades, you know, as far as venue and everything else. And you could look at that as, woe is me, this is not fair, on and on and on. You work to this point of whatever, this opening up. But when it was in the context of here's another impression to digest, it just took the sting right out of it. So then the next step was just to cancel and explain, you know, what was going on. But I could have seen myself getting caught up in such negative emotion over that. And every time it would come up, I'd stew about it and stuff. And that beautiful phrase from Robin Bloor of just digesting the impression just took that away. You know, so I felt like I was in some heightened states as all this stuff was kind of happening, spending the time in Houston. So you're kind of outside of your normal, you know, life. And what was kind of the other side of the coin is when I came back to Austin almost 2 weeks ago, I'm feeling fine. So I go back to work and I go back into the kind of the daily pattern. And I could see losing that little magical, beautiful moment of openness as things kind of got into kind of the mechanical patterned behavior. So my intention, and I've tried to cultivate, is how do I get back to that in everyday life? And some days are better than others, but it's been a revealing thing that I will be eternally grateful to Robin Blauer with that one little off-sided little phrase in answering a beautiful question. And that's probably it for me.
That's so good, Rusty. Thank you for sharing. And we're all just with you in prayer and really, really wishing you healing in your journey. And what a witness to the fact that one little idea or one phrase embedded within the work ideas, you know, that everything's eating something and we're here to digest and influences. One idea can change our lives. Mm-hmm. And especially when one, like an unexpected big event, like getting news that you have leukemia. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than that. That event is a pretty big event for most people. And to have an idea come to you like that as a B influence, as an influence that helps you navigate and literally move through it and gives you a concept to hold on to is very powerful. So thank you for sharing that. And it says a lot about your being too, that you were able to listen for that word and take it with you and remember it, kind of the word of God to you. And what's interesting is that Michael Singer in his new book talks about the pain in our life simply is our inability to digest something. And he said, it's okay. It just takes time sometimes to digest things, emotions or events. And I thought that was such a gentle, gracious way of kind of navigating the work, is that, hey, it just takes time for me to digest this event or this situation. Yeah. And that, and just one other thought that'll transition to our conversation tonight about theosis. As we are digesting things, we're being digested. And that's the beautiful thing is, you know, that we're being consumed by God, eaten up, so to speak. And so even if we don't digest things, God does it for us in a certain sense. And we're held in the body of Christ and consumed in that way. We'll talk about that here in just a little bit. But Rusty, beautiful to see you. And Sue, welcome home and prayers for the healing journey. And
great to be here.
Do
great.
Feel the love and the prayers.
Yeah, I feel every bit of it.
Okay, I'm going to share my screen and we'll move into the subject tonight of theosis. And I'm sure this is of interest to everyone. Who wouldn't want to become more godlike? If you read the email today, you know that's a big subject, and I encourage you to, the homework encourages all of us to read the email several times slowly and just to digest it. There are big ideas. And notice also the image that this is really, if Bernadette Roberts were alive today and had the funding to have a graphic artist design her journey of the self or the circle tour. I think her little circles would be replaced by something like this image, which is so powerful. And this notion of the diminishing self moving from the in to the out, the center consuming the circumference. And it's a deliberately chosen image for this subject. But theosis is like a rose. You know, you can destroy a rose if you start digging in and trying to dismantle and find its beauty. And I've done that in my life. I've been so mesmerized by the beauty of the rose, I try and peel it open and see what's in there. But the beautiful and elegant, closed and blooming profundity of God is like, theosis is like a rose in that way. Theosis is the beautiful and the elegant, closed and blooming profundity of God. It's both beautiful and elegant, closed and blooming profundity. And theosis is one of the great subjects human beings can ponder and contemplate. It's easy to fall into the trap of explaining when it comes to theological things or even work ideas. And so we try to focus on describing versus explaining, observing versus judging. And St. Augustine one time said about theosis as well as about time, he said, before I'm asked what theosis is, I know well enough what it is. But when I'm asked what theosis is and try to explain it, I am baffled and speechless. It's just a reminder that sometimes when we try and put things into words, big ideas, we just go silent. We can't do it. And we might think we know or might feel we know something, but until we're asked to write it down or speak it out, we really sometimes don't know what it is. And that's a good reminder for all of us whenever we're talking about God, the great mystery. And then all we can really do is comprehend the incomprehensibility of theosis. You know, if you can just comprehend the incomprehensibility, that's progress. I'll say it again. If you can just comprehend the incomprehensibility of theosis, that's progress and development. So let's begin tonight by just reviewing what we talked about last week and in many other times throughout the Journey School's existence. We've talked about these ideas that are on the screen in various ways. This is an excerpt from a classic workbook, and it outlines the four states of consciousness or the four levels of consciousness. But I want to approach this by asking a question. What is the diagnosis of humankind? What is the work's diagnosis of humankind? What does the work say is wrong with human beings? You know, quote unquote, wrong. What's the work attempting to fix? And the bottom line is that it accuses us only of being asleep. That is, the work does. And so the fundamental issue, if you read this, if you take it in, is that the work says that human beings are asleep, either in dream sleep or waking consciousness sleep, where we think we're awake, but actually not. That first and second state is where most human beings live, according to the work. And then moving into the third state of self-consciousness or self-awareness, self-remembering is part of what we're all about and what all religions are about. But this notion of sleep at its heart has this inner fragmentation and relational separation in terms of how it manifests. That the problem isn't that we're asleep, the problem is that we're fragmented and we think we're awake. We're fragmented and we think we're connected with other people. And so this sleep leads to inner fragmentation and the perpetuation of inner fragmentation and relational separation with other people. And all the difficulties that negative emotions bring and multiplicity brings, and keeping accounts and having our sad stories and our mechanicality, our personality that just reacts or doesn't see things as they really are, sees it through its lens, its personality lens alone. And so you can see that if that's the diagnosis of humankind psychologically, that it would it would be very important for human beings to wake up and to come out of that dream state. And the point I'm trying to make is that the work's diagnosis and the work's therapies to address the diagnosis as a remedy are all primarily of the psychological level, but they ultimately accomplish something very similar to what religions do, what Christianity does, and what in particular theosis is all about. But they may start from different places in terms of their diagnosis. So hopefully that's clear, and I'll just continue with the contrast and then I'll pause for conversation. And this is from last week's email. In this fourth state, a person can see things as they are. Flashes of this state of consciousness also occur. In the religions of all nations, there are indications of the possibility of a state of consciousness of this kind, which is called enlightenment and various other names, but which cannot be described in words. But the only right way to objective consciousness is through the development of self-consciousness. If an ordinary person is artificially brought back into a state of objective consciousness, the fourth state, and afterwards brought back to his usual state, one will remember nothing and one will think for a time one had lost consciousness. But in the state of self-consciousness, a person can have flashes of objective consciousness and remember them. That's according to Uspensky. Man 5, 6, and 7 are all stages within this fourth state of consciousness, differing in their permanence or in the depth of immersion into the wholeness. So man 5, 6, and 7 are just another way of talking about the map of human development of people who are in that third and fourth state of consciousness. Man number 5, 6, and 7, whatever that may mean. Those designations are trying to describe people who aren't asleep anymore, people who don't have inner fragmentation, and people who aren't living in relational separation with themselves, with God, with others, with creation itself. Thus, Jim looking at the little spider, or Greta looking at the baby. Those are third state conscious levels of consciousness, and we need more human beings doing that level of existence. So in contrast to Christianity, it's not much of a contrast, but I just want to draw this out a little bit because it helps us, at least it helps me understand more deeply what it is that I say I believe and practice, to give an answer, a winsome answer to my hope for the world. And the Christian diagnosis is not sleep, but sin. But even though they use a different word, which has a lot of moral overtones, unfortunately, it didn't really originally mean that. But the difference is the Christian diagnosis includes inner fragmentation, just like the work, our multiplicity. It includes relational separation, but it adds one other dimension, which Gurdjieff really didn't talk about. Maybe he felt it or believed it or knew it, but he described it in a completely different way. In a certain sense, because Christianity had kind of lost its way, and so he was trying to do something bigger and help humankind move beyond a dead religion that Christianity had become in some ways and in some parts and in some expressions. And the diagnosis that Christianity offers is that there's a spiritual disconnection. It's not just an inner fragmentation. There's just not something psychologically wrong that we learn from our parents or when we're born into this world of sleeping people, as the work says. But Christianity says one step deeper, and the reason why there's sleep is because of this spiritual disconnection. There's a spiritual problem at the core of the psychological manifestation of sleep. I'll say that again. There's a spiritual problem at the core of the psychological manifestation of sleep. So dealing with the psychological manifestation of sleep gets you deep into the healing process. But there's something even deeper, Christianity says, as do other religions, and that's that spiritual disconnection. It's not just a matter of different languaging or different conceptions, psychology and spirituality. It's different, deep, you might say, premises. That there's this spiritual disconnection that shows up in all sorts of ways among humans. But you can say that answer the question, so what is the sin? What is the spiritual disconnection? And you can say that it's basically like this mirror that's been fragmented or shattered. The notion of being spiritually disconnected or living in sin is one of where one's seeing is completely distorted, that we see as in a mirror dimly. We don't know why it is this way. No one really does. The different traditions try and give different answers, but the seeing is distorted, and not just seeing of ourselves, but seeing of reality, seeing of others, seeing of God. So we're constantly missing the mark because we can't see clearly. And this seeing has a lot to do with our intellectual center and the harmonization of the hemispheres, as well as the emotional and intellectual centers. It also has a lot to do with what the spiritual traditions called the nous, or the cleansing of the mind or the soul. But this essence of sin was missing the mark because you couldn't see the mark. You couldn't see bullseye. Sin was the Greek word harmatia that was from archery. It said you missed the mark. You'd line up to shoot the arrow and the arrow would fly past the target. It wouldn't even hit one of the rings, just missed the target altogether. And certainly wouldn't hit bullseye. So this is the state human beings live in, and this is the reason for the terror of the situation on this planet, as Gurdjieff said. Sin is missing the mark. Why is it missing the mark? Because we're not seeing correctly. Our distortion of our seeing apparatus, not just our physical sight, but our inner eye, is fragmented, multiplicity. And there's not a harmony in our inner being that leads to this seeing. What's so interesting is that Gurdjieff taught the same thing. He just used a different word for it. He said the fundamental problem with human beings isn't sin. It's this thing called the Kunda buffer, which we can't get into tonight. But the Kunda buffer, if you read about it in Gurdjieff's masterpiece, Beelzebub's Tales, the Kunda buffer and its removal from humankind made us see everything topsy-turvy. Up is down and down is up. And I thought it's a beautiful description of why things are the way they are on this planet, is because we can't see clearly because of the spiritual disconnection. And that's the heart of what needs to be healed and why we need an example and a way shower to show us the way and to heal us from within and to correct this spiritual perception, which we'll get to here in a moment. Before we get into this comparison again, I want to stop the share and open up the floor. Anyone have a comment so far on what we're talking about? How's this landing for you? Take a moment to just pause. Anyone wish to raise a question or make a comment? Existentially, for yourself, do you find this to be true? Do you find that the missing the mark and the Kunda buffer notion impacts how you see reality, see yourself, see God, see the world? Do you find this to be experientially true in any way? Anyone? Roland, please.
Somebody, my counselor told me that we don't know enough to despair. And my ego tells me that I do. And so I want to just turn away from my ego. Those moments when I get discouraged.
Yeah, I mean, that's a beautiful way of putting it. Our level of consciousness can't see in all things. So why despair? We don't know enough to despair. That's a great line. Beautiful wisdom. And, connection between levels of consciousness, the higher the level, the deeper the level, it sees more comprehensively versus only seeing one thing at a time, not the whole. So those who can see the whole don't despair. Karen, briefly, please.
Thank you, Peter. Well, briefly, it's for me when, I think about an eye that I have, and that when I get identified to it, such as one of anger, one, someone hasn't heard me correctly and they're going on as if they understood me, and I have to say, no, wait, that's not where I am, which is new for me to do. But I'm, you know, learning more about how to reintegrate back into a connection with another person and to watch myself change my language and to, you know, consider someone else. And also I'm feeling the tension of my discomfort, that, you know, thank God can give me at times the words to say that don't have anything to do, no identification with that I or that anger, because that's not reality. Reality is everything else. It's not just that.
Yeah, thank you, Karen. It's so practical. So mm-hmm. as we grow in the levels of consciousness, our languaging changes, evolves, and our capacity to relate with other people and connect with them evolves. Very practical fruit of the work. Whereas the work talks about it in terms of levels of consciousness, Christianity says that's what theosis is doing. As we are being transformed more and more and more into godlikeness, our languaging changes, our patterns of behavior changes, our capacity for despair or pain or ability to digest, as we were talking about just a moment ago with Rusty. So it's really quite very practical. So thank you, Roland. Thank you, Karen. So we'll go back to the PowerPoint sharing on the screen here. And just wanted to briefly notice these contrasts and similarities. The left-hand side is the work. And we're just starting with the third level, you know, just bypassing the first and second levels of consciousness. The third level of the work, its primary practices are inner stop and self-remembering. And at that third level, there's a boundary line. It starts to occur the emergence of what the work calls the master, which leads to the fourth level of consciousness. We can have experiences of that fourth level, or it can be more permanent. But the practice is one of simply being. See things as they really are. That's the definition of the fourth state of consciousness. So do you hear the connection between the healing of seeing, that inner seeing, how we perceive the world because the consciousness has evolved, that we see things as they really are and we don't resist. There's a new capacity to bear. There's a new capacity to relate with. And this is where the emergence of real I occurs, probably earlier than that too. But you can see here that the notion of real I and actually seeing is very powerful. On the Christian side of things, what the Christian tradition talks about in terms of what might be the third level of consciousness is known as the illuminative, the purgative, the illuminative, and then the unitive. It's called different things. But the main practices of the illuminative state or the illuminative phase of the spiritual journey, what the work calls the third level of consciousness, are regularly described as hesychia or stillness and meditative prayer. That it's primarily these practices that cultivate and initiate that illuminative state and lead one to that next level of consciousness or that next state that Christianity calls the unitive state or the unitive revelation, or simply theoria, which is the Greek word for contemplation, which has at its heart the root word seeing, to see clearly. And this is where the mystics say things like Meister Eckhart did, the eye that I see with is the eye that sees me. These beautiful statements of the subject and the object dissolving in the foreground and the background becoming one. They don't disappear. It's a union of distinction, but there's such a union there that you can't tell where you begin and God ends. It's a horizon experience. You can't tell where the sea and the sky meet, but there is a line. And that type of new seeing is unitive seeing, and it was beautifully demonstrated and articulated in several of the shares tonight about the spider and the child. And the other aspect that flows out of this unitive state is this selfless serving, this loving service to all. It's a very Christian perspective, but ultimately it's similar to the emergence of real I, which is able to be and to be unmoved by anything that happens. And so there's a real courage there to give of oneself and to spend oneself, because you're no longer coming from the ego or reactivity. So just very briefly, theosis in particular, as it relates to these levels of consciousness, both the work terms and the Christian perspective, is what happens in and through the unitive state. So let me just put this back again. When you're in this unitive state, or in the fourth level of consciousness, what ends up happening is that theosis starts to begin in earnest in and through the unitive state and takes you beyond the unitive state, almost the dissolving of unitive state, and to use Bernadette's terms, that the unitive state gets eaten up and consumes more and more of yourself. So her circle tour is a wonderful illustration of what theosis is. So if you're looking at the circle image, you can just bear with me here for a moment in the simplicity of this, but the center of the circle has been eaten out or bored out. This is theosis. The center is theosis. This is not God and it's not human. It's the union of the two. It's the water into wine. This is a mystery. The center is a total mystery, and it's the unit of revelation. It's theosis. It's the increasing assimilation of the divine energy in and through you. The remaining part here that looks shiny, looks like the rest of the inner tube, but you can look closely at this and you can see the fine gradations of the self. This is the personality, the self, even one's consciousness, in Bernadette's terms, that is getting consumed and eaten away. And what she basically says is that as you come to the end of life, there's just a filament of self left, a dotted line, so to speak. And in her case, even that went away before she physically died. But for most of us, we don't need to enter into that no self state in this life. Death will take care of that. We don't need to go seeking for the no self state. What I think we can wish for is theosis, which is the process of transformation of more and more and more of the self becoming divinized, or this center, the logos and your human nature being made one, which is a great, great mystery. So I'll just read this little statement. According to the witness of Bernadette Roberts, the unit of revelation reveals that theosis is the process whereby the divine energy, or you could say the logos, consumes more and more of our self or consciousness, turning you and me more and more into Christ, the union of the divine logos spirit with human nature. And so true human nature is revealed, kind of like polished away, or the clay being removed from the Buddha, the golden Buddha. And there it is, true human nature, united with the divine. And in a certain sense, you could say it only differs in degree to anyone else. Because if you were to make this in reverse and draw this center all the way down to a little pinprick, you could say that's where we start on our human journeys. We all are born with a pinprick of that union or that basic core of goodness. But it starts to be eating us out and digesting the self more and more. So a practical intersection of theosis and the work of inner Christianity, as we say, here are several very, very practical things to just consider. And these are from Burl Pogson's book, Practical Work Tasks. In other words, if you were to ever wonder, what would it look like? What would my life look like to live at increasingly more and more in the third and fourth states of consciousness, what would it look like to increasingly live more and more in the process of theosis, being transformed more and more into the divine energy in this lifetime? So you becoming a saint in this lifetime, we don't have to wait until we're dead, you know, to enter into those higher levels. What would it look like in this lifetime? And these are some ways in which I think it's very helpful, puts words on the incomprehensibility of theosis. What does it look like when we have more and more theosis occurring in our lives? We have freedom from outer and inner arguing with other people. We have freedom from having your life lived for you by someone else or something else. You're able to be really you. You have freedom from inner talking, which is manifests in all sorts of different ways, self-criticism, self-judgment, judgment of others. We have freedom from the need to be right. We have freedom from the prison of identification, which is very significant in how it manifests in our lives. We have freedom from making inner accounts, letting people off the hook, freedom from the comparison or envy of others. These are just seven very practical ways in which we can measure and observe how we might be growing in our level of consciousness or how theosis might be occurring in our lives. And what I love about the work is that whereas Christianity just says one thing, you know, you're theosis, you're becoming divinized. It's very nebulous, doesn't have any specificity to it. Well, you could say the increasing virtues, you could say that you're growing in the fruit of the spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control, these sorts of things. But here in the work, it gives us a very, very detailed set of ideas, that things we all understand by these terms, the more we study them and practice them, very, very powerful ways of understanding how the work integrates with the Christian and spiritual journeys in this XY axis of transformation. So I really encourage you to ponder these things and to see where in your life is the edge of your growth, where in my life is the edge of my growth. And that really comes from self-observing, seeing clearly, seeing reality as it is, seeing one's edge of growth or edge of being. So that concludes all I wanted to share, but here is the list of the homework for next week. In particular, I just wanted to highlight this the link that's in the email regarding Bernadette Roberts' 30-minute teaching. It's the sixth session of her circle tour of the spiritual journey, and you can watch it online, and I encourage everyone to watch that. It's a very good segment to digest and let it digest you. So I believe I have just a moment or two for a comment or question, if there's anyone who wishes to process together or raise a question. Feel free to just raise your hand. Certainly so much more could be said on this subject. It is incomprehensible, but perhaps tonight is a first step. Anyone wish to raise a comment or question? Thank you all for listening. Blessings on our journeys tonight and always. Marianne?
Thank you, Peter, for that blessing and to leave us with much to ponder and to apply to ourselves, particularly those seven freedoms. And tomorrow morning, your presentation will be posted in the archives, which it always is following the class. You could go and actually read and ponder that particular slide or any slide which will be there. So thank you once again for an evening of rich food and participation. So we have just a brief closing word from Rodney Collin. Our work is all religions. It is real understanding. What is the difference between early Christianity and the way today? It is the same. The work cannot be new, but truth must always be expressed in new language. The words of Christ have waited 2,000 years to be understood. And thank you, Mr. Gurdjieff, for helping us understand some of them. Let us join together and pray and affirm the prayer of God's love, that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake. Watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and to sleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen.